Welcome to the Child Free Wealth Podcast, hosted by Bree and Dr. J, certified financial planner. Here we discuss life and finances as it relates to being child free. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Please consult your advisor before implementing any ideas heard on this podcast.
Hey, Child Free Wealth listeners, this is a topic I've been wanting to do for a while, and I had to get Bree to put it on the list here because if you haven't figured out, Bree's the one's in charge of this podcast. She just tells me what to do. And this topic is what I call flashing red lights. So when we meet with people, we do initial introductory meetings, about an hour, and we do ongoing meetings. We meet every month. I'm always looking for flashing red lights. These are like things like, hold up, stop, we need to fix this. Like, I understand the rest of this stuff matters, but this is a priority. And I think it's a good way for you to check and go like, hey, am I like doing this stuff? So we're going to go through a whole bunch of them and why we see them as flashing red lights. This is not all of them, but like these are the ones that just stop me in my tracks. We'll work through that. Bree, do you have a favorite flashing red light or like something like this is the one you love to talk about?
Yes, it is your beneficiaries being wrong because this is something that happens so easily and people are like, oh, I did that already. Might have done it, but that doesn't mean all systems continue to keep. Sometimes systems mess up and they will delete beneficiaries or they will change them back and they won't save them. And this is probably one of the most frequent ones that I see because it's not something that we think about or necessarily even know.
Yeah. So let's talk about this one. So beneficiary is somebody like on your 401k or retirement plans, other things, your life insurance, that is the person that gets that money. And we'll often find this like by mistake. You know, like we'll be scrolling through their accounts or looking through their, and like, wait, there's no beneficiary. Or I've had it where like, I'm like, who the heck is that person? You know, they've never mentioned that. And it becomes priority. We actually recommend once a year when you do open enrollment to check your beneficiaries. Sometimes like the HR system will pick up like old random things. Who knows? I had somebody the other day, their account got moved and it came with an address from 2 years ago, like random things. Now, let me tell you about a interesting beneficiary story, a kind of sad one too. So one of my friends, his friend passed late 30s and had a pension. His ex-wife was still listed as the beneficiary. And by the way, the new wife went and said, hey, can I get the money? The ex was like, nope. And by the way, there's no way to change that. Your will does not pass over your beneficiaries. It doesn't change it. You can't go to court and say, change it. The ex-wife got the pension for life. This is one of those, like, if I see something weird here, we got to stop.
Yeah, I think it's a really important point you made there is beneficiaries supersede the will. So whatever your beneficiary is listed, doesn't matter if your will says something else. It's going to be what the beneficiary says.
Absolutely. And people always try to tell me, no, they can't change it in the system. No, it just does. Like it just magically changes. I don't know why. Like it's your HR system or something else changing things in the background. Always double check. I'm going to pick one from the list. By the way, Bree made up a list just to spin me up on some of these. I love this one. Spending more than you earn. We'll do the math. You go, okay, you're bringing in $7,000 a month and you're spending $9,000. That's a flashing red light. We cannot pass go. Do not collect $200. Do not go further. And I think it sounds simple, but most people don't realize how much they're spending. You know, if you don't have a budget, if you don't have a system, you don't have a structure, I will add things up. And I, on our initial meetings, I'm just doing back of that napkin math, writing down on my notepad and kind of work through. I'm like, wait, you said you spend how much and your rent how much? And one of the ones that's very common here is like, I'll see housing expenses that are way out of whack. You know, my general rule is about a third of your take home goes to housing. Once you get to half of your take home going to housing, you really don't have enough money left over for other things. When you get to 2/3 of your money going to housing, I don't know how you make it. You know, I had somebody in LA, and LA housing is stupid expensive. And I'm looking at their numbers, and it was something like 75% of their take home was going to housing. I'm like, you can't afford groceries. Like, we have to stop there. We cannot do anything else financially. Have you seen this, Bree?
Yeah, I have. And I think sometimes, at least in my opinion, when I say housing, I mean like including utilities and those different things. Some people are like, no, it's fine if your rent is at, well, okay, but utilities can also be a large expense that count as your housing. So I include that when I say housing. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm looking at it as a total number. Now, by the way, I said about a third. Like, you know, if you're like 36%, I don't care. I'm talking about these big, you know, jumps in numbers. And how people say, well, I don't know why I can't make ends meet. I'm like, I do. It's not Amazon or whatever, DoorDash or whatever it is that I pick on. It is your housing, you know, and that's a total housing cost. And then they go, well, but I'll get a roommate. I'm like, well, that doesn't really fix it because you don't know they're going to give you money and all that. And oh, it just becomes a problem. All right, Bree, pick your next favorite.
No estate planning paperwork. I love estate planning. We all know that by now, or at least.
You're special. Tell me about it.
So this is going to be what happens after you pass in the case of a will. A will says where your money is going. With that, you have an executor who is the person in charge of sending your money and taking care of things, tying everything up after you pass. There's also the financial and medical power of attorneys. They make decisions for you while you are still alive and are unable to make those decisions for yourself. So they have power of attorney. They have the power to make choices for your medical or make choices for your finances while you're still alive and are unable to do that. And if you do not assign somebody to those positions, then the state gets to pick for you. And I do not trust the state of wherever I live in the Midwest to handle those things for me. What about
it's you? Not only the state wherever you live in the West. If you like traveling and you don't have this paperwork, it's whatever state you happen to be in.
Yeah. State of wherever I'm at.
Yeah. And I don't care what your politics are. I don't trust the government to make decisions for me. And the other one, by the way, is, you know, if you don't have the will, they'll go, oh, well, we'll try to find your next of kin in theory. But I live in a completely different state than all my next of kin. They'll put like an ad in the newspaper and be like, anyone know Jay? No? Okay, thank you. We'll take his money.
Yeah.
Like, that's why we have to have this paperwork. Finding somebody to make decisions for you, that's a, you know, a whole separate topic. But if you have no paperwork, you got to get it done now. You got to get something in place. They'll be like, well, the only person I have right now is my mom. Okay. That's not a good solution long term because they're older than you, but at least you got something to start. And this is really important for the soloists. Single, no kids, you got to have somebody on that paperwork. The medical power of attorney gets filed with the doctor, all that. Now, let me pick my next fun one.
Hold on. I want to add another point on that. It is also important if you recently got married or divorced to update your estate planning because you want to make sure the person that you either commit to spend your life with or you have separated from, the correct person is in charge there.
Makes good sense. All right. Next on my list, we got a whole bunch of ones on debt that like flash, but I want to talk about one that really drives me crazy. And by the way, this has now become a rant session. It's okay. But like these are the things that like we see with clients and we're like, it just jumps out. Is I'll see people with, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 in credit card debt and $20,000 in their savings account. Okay. So pay off your credit card tomorrow. Like, but I like having my nest egg, my emergency fund. I'm like, yeah, but the credit card's charging me 20 or 30% a year. And if your savings are in a regular savings account, it's less than 0.3% or even a high yield of 5%, you got to go pay off your debt. Now, I've had this battle with people all the time. Like, it's one of those that occurs almost once a week. And they'll go, well, but I need this cash because blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, but you're paying to keep the debt. And that's the hard part is like, how do you get somebody who's got this mindset that says, yep, I've got my savings. I like it. I don't want to pay off my debt. What do you think, Bree? You and I have had these arguments before.
Yeah. And one, I think it can really be dependent on interest rates, why people are resistant to certain things. Obviously, if it's, I say anything over than five, like, let's work on really getting that gone. Then I'm anything less than I'm like, okay, we don't have to be as crazy about like hammer down, lead foot on it. Still take care of it, make it a priority. But I'm not going to say you need to not do nothing for the next 6 months in order to get it gone, because I think there's a life to live. But I had this really interesting conversation with a client recently, and I did not mention anything. I came up with different ways. They had a large amount in their savings and they had some debt, and they reached out to me and they said, hey, you know, in our next session, can we talk about taking some money from savings and paying off some of our debt with it? And I was like, absolutely. But I didn't come up with that conclusion for them. They had to come to it themselves. And that was a much more beautiful answer because it was something they wanted to do that I wasn't really hammering down, pushing.
I'll hammer much more. It's just style things. I mean, I'm looking at debt as stealing your future, and it's okay, by the way, to have, we have different things. We're talking about red lights that kind of get both of us differently. And I think the other one I see on debt is like, oh, I've got all my money in my, I'm going to pick on Robinhood today. I've got all my money in my Robinhood account. It's a brokerage account, but I've got debt. I'm like, no, you pay off your debt first, then you invest. And I think that's hard for people to get. I can make 7% of the market. Yeah, but you're paying 20% on the credit card. Like, it's just paying off the credit card is a risk-free, tax-free return. I've also had people come to me and, hey, I want to take out $100,000, $1 million, whatever in debt. And I'm like, well, that's not something I'm cool with. And sometimes it makes sense, sometimes it doesn't, but we'll have a discussion about it. But I think the hard part is, like, debt can completely mess up your plan. And for people that are heavily in debt and they still got money hanging around, I'm like, we're just not using our money right. There are times where I'll give in, but there are other times I'm like, no, like, we got to fix this. And yes, I know debt's a divisive issue, but let's be real, on our No Baby Steps program, we're a no debt place. That's No Baby Steps 2, get out of debt. If you're looking for how to leverage and how to get a lot of debt and all that, go see Grant Cardone or the other ones that talk about getting a lot of debt. I'm not hating on it. It's just not the way we do it. It's okay if that's the way you want to go. I just don't think it's the right option. So it's a flashing red light for me. All right, what's next on your list, Bree?
Lacking disability insurance, not having that in place, because disability insurance is going to help protect your income in the event that you become disabled, which 30% of people will at some point use or go on disability, become disabled in their lifetime. And if you don't have the finances to support living on one income, or if you're a soloist living on no income, becoming disabled can be really traumatic and a financial emergency.
Yeah, by the way, people think about, well, Social Security will cover me. And technically, by the way, Social Security, old age security disability income, I think I had to think about it. It's OASDI, but it's like $1,000 a month, maybe $1,500. It is not enough to live on. I mean, let's just be real on that. We're talking about for the rest of your life. I don't care what age you are, you got to get disability insurance. Life insurance for child-free folks, we can skip in most cases. Disability, we can. The other thing with disability is I want to make sure you have enough coverage. I've seen this recently where people like, the employer covers for like 2 years. Well, 2 years, that's nothing. So I'm 45 and I get disabled and I get disability till 47. And then I'm like, good luck for the next 20 years, whatever. Or the other things. I think if your employer does not offer disability, I always send people to group policies. One of my favorite to send people to is actually the Freelancers Union, because a lot of people are freelancers. You can get it through there. I don't know, but you got to get disability insurance in place.
Yes, I 1,000% agree. And it's something that it's not talked about. And it's not as fun to talk about. And when you go to an insurance broker, sometimes they're not going to even really mention it. So they'll sell you life insurance.
Yep. Next on my list is what I call mixing recipes. I will hear them talking about two or three different things they're trying to do at once. Like, hey, I want to do this investing plan and I'm trying to get out of debt and I'm buying an IUL. By the way, don't get me started on IULs. That's a separate thing. I'm life insurance and people are sole insurance. We could do whole separate episodes on that. But they're mixing recipes that they found usually online or friends said. And I think it's a natural thing because we're getting information from all over. But if you take a piece from this and a piece from that, you end up with something that doesn't match you. I think the other one on the mixing recipes is there's a different recipe for the standard life plan and being child-free. And it comes across very quickly when you're having discussions. People are like, oh, I want to buy a house. And I'm like, why? Well, because my dad says I need to buy a house. And I'm like, that's good for your dad. That's not necessarily good for you. What's the standard life plan and yours? I think those recipes should get mixed all over the place. I know you're more on this social stuff than I am. I agree. I mean, are you seeing it too?
Yes, I see it. Admittedly, I've kind of been in the mood where I just would rather throw my phone in the river. So I've kind of been ignoring a lot of it. But I have seen Bernadette Joy, and she recently has been in a couple articles. I can't remember the exact headline, but it's something along the lines of, I paid off $300,000 in debt. Pay off your debt, then invest. Humans suck at multitasking. And so I will find the article and link in the show notes. But I thought it was really interesting, and a conversation I've had with a lot of people is it can be hard to focus on multiple goals at one time, right? We're not trying to run a marathon at the same time we're trying to prepare for a bodybuilding contest. Like, that just doesn't make any sense. And you can't focus on both those or do both of those to your full capacity. So why are we going to focus on paying off a bunch of debt and also trying to invest the most at the same time? Those things don't really work well.
Yeah. And I think the question I use with the clients is, I go, whose voice is in your head telling you got to do that? Which could be influencers, it could be your family, it could be culture, it could be other people. Yeah, but who is driving you to say, I got to do all of these at once, or I got to do this and that? We're like, do one step, then the next. You can have five goals, but you have first goal, then second goal, and third goal. You can't do them all at once. All right, what's next on your list, Bree?
Aging parents and not having a plan for them or not knowing anything about what's happening. I think you'd be surprised that the amount of parents we see who things just aren't set up properly. They might not even have a will or estate planning in place, like I talked about a little bit ago in this episode. Just not having a plan for them, because they can really impact your financial life and just your life in general. If something happens, then it's a much harder to prepare before something becomes an emergency.
Yeah, and I'll see signs of this one. This is what I was like, we're doing their budget, working through it. And they're like, yeah, I get $400 a month to my parent. I go, for what? And they go, just because I always have. And I'm like, well, why? What are we doing? What's the boundary? What's the support level? Does it go up over time? Are you paying for their long-term care? All of these things. And they're like, well, but it's just a cultural thing we've always done. And I'm like, yeah, but you need a plan for it. And you need to know what their situation is. And the only parents we're taking on as clients here regularly are parents who are child-free folks. It's amazing how you dig in and you're like, find stuff that the parents don't know or the kids don't know or whatever. And it's like, wow, you know, there's not a plan here. In actuality, if you don't have a plan for your caring for your parents, it can be worse than not having a plan for yourself. Are they going to move in with you or not? You're like, my wife and I, nobody moves in with us. That's just kind of how we're doing it. But we'll support them in other ways. And you got to find that balance. Although I find that asking people about their parents, it's kind of like either one's like, please take this over for me. Or they're like, yeah, I don't really want to talk about that right this second. There's kind of nowhere in between. Is that fair?
That's fair. And I also think it's important to say, you know, just because you do something for one parent doesn't mean that you have to do it for another parent. It's okay to have boundaries and say, yes, I will support this parent, but this parent has not been a good parent or whatever, and we're not going to help them. That is hard, but if you need to do that to protect your mental sanity and just yourself as a person, that's fine. There's no judgment in that.
It's a discussion we're going to be having more and more and more. And we as a society need to figure out better ways to take care of our older folks. And that's part of the reason, you know, we worry about our own aging and we got to have a plan. But we're not going to fix that in a podcast, that's for sure. Next up on my red lights is, let's call it not understanding investments, but I really mean like doing random stuff with their investments. So I'll see this a lot. And people, I don't recommend crypto because I have no clue what it is as an asset and what its history is and where it's going to go. Now, the technology, the blockchain makes sense, but what is Dogecoin? I don't know. Yeah, what are these things? And they'll go, well, I bought a little of this and I did a little of that. And I go, cool. What was your investing strategy? What does that investment mean? How does it impact your finances? What's the tax implication? They go, I don't know. And I'm like, well, then we shouldn't be buying that investment. Or the even worse, my friend said, by the way, if your friend says you should invest in something, like, no, that's not a reason to invest in it. Or even worse, they've been working with somebody for their finances and just have no clue what that person's ever been doing. And Bri, I know you got something to say about fees and investments.
Oh, yeah. I am not a fan of fees or for investment management. I think that you need to understand what's happening. And I think you need to learn what's going on because, I mean, not to say like Bernie Madoff, those people didn't really know what was going on. They were just giving him their money. And look how that turned out. I'm not going to say that's going to happen with everybody. But my point is, know what is going on with your money and be attentive to it and work to understand it. Don't just hand it over and say, well, they'll deal with it.
Yeah, and I found some people where like they've been following some strategy somebody set out for them decades ago, and it makes no sense. And I'll ask them, why are you doing this? Well, because I had this person or my parents had this person, and this is who we've always worked with, and we just trust them. And I'm like, you trust but verify, okay? You need to understand what you're investing in, why, how it impacts your finances, all that. You know, our focus, we're advice only. We just teach people to do it, and we look over their shoulder and show them how to push the button. But they have that control. You need your investments to work. You don't need them to be sexy. If you're like, hey, this, I want to be in this because it's the cutting edge of something. Wait, okay, fine. Put like 1% of your money in, no more. And like, just who cares if that money disappears? But you have to have a plan.
And I think one thing we've recently ran into has been people who've had plans in the past, but now life has changed, their income has changed. And usually those plans initially say, fill up your Roth IRA. And so they've been continuing to do that, but now they're over the income limit. And so we have to go back and reverse that. So as your income changes, you need to go and work with somebody and figure out and update your plan, because contributing to a Roth IRA, you're making $300,000 a year. You are over the income limit. You cannot do that. There are penalties if you don't reverse those things. And so getting those taken care of and updating the plan over time is very important.
Okay, and it's time now for Bree to give one of her last red lights, but you just spun me up. I got to do it. The other one is taxes and understanding like which accounts, how this works. Right now, people are so excited about this backdoor Roth. Every time I see a backdoor Roth IRA, it's a disaster because it's not done right and not documented right. You got to understand the taxes behind what you're doing. Investing, you can understand pretty simply. We talk about long-term passive investing. It's simple. Let it go. But the tax part of it is so huge. And I get people like, well, you know, I maxed out my 401k. Cool. And then I changed employers and maxed out that 401k. No, you can't do that. Or, oh, hey, I did a backdoor Roth, but I still have these other IRAs. You can't do that. Or I did this and I didn't file this tax. And I'm like, oh, nightmare. Like, and they're like, well, but my tax person said I could do it. Okay. Well, remember, your tax filer takes whatever information you gave them and files it. They are not the IRS saying this is good or bad or ugly. Some will provide more judgment, some will. If your tax preparer says you can write off everything personally on your business, they're wrong. There's so many things like, I don't want you to be a tax expert, but man, there are times I'm like, look at somebody's tax, I'm like, oh, this is hurting my brain. And it just is, because like, there's no plan behind it. And I always feel bad about that, but I'm like, this is not right. And we've had to get people, you know, correct things from previous years and other things. It's a whole lot easier to do the right way the first time. You know, we do tax planning twice a year, you know, kind of after you file your taxes, that April 15th time, we double check that. And then just before the end of the year, we do more tax planning because it's such a big thing. And I will tell you, the tax planning, probably one of the few things you can't learn on your own. You know, I'm actually on an IRS mailing list and they send me like 2 emails a day for things that change. Way too much. But I'm like, oh, hey, this is going to impact my client. You're not on the IRS mailing list double checking things. I mean, it's just like, and I'm not saying I'm perfect at it either. You know, we're going to do tax planning. Somebody else can do tax filing. We can still list things. But man, taxes can be a flashing red light. And by the way, just because you make cash does not mean you don't want to pay taxes on it. And just because you have a 1099 or work for Uber doesn't mean you have to pay tax. You have to pay tax on every dollar you earn. If you steal $1 million from the bank, you still have to pay tax.
That's true.
And if you're in the U.S.
Don't do that, though. But.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, let's not do that. But if you're in the U.S., you're taxed on your worldwide earnings. Moving to another country is not going to change. All these fancy. It really drives me crazy when somebody says, I went to like XYZ innovative tax planning. And I'm like, ooh, innovative and tax. That scares me. We go right up to the line. We do exactly what IRS says. We can save money, but we don't go over the line. All right, Bree, what's your last red light?
It would be having either no insurance or being underinsured, especially when it comes to things like your home or your auto or even your health insurance. Because if we're not having proper amounts of insurance on there, that can be really bad. Especially think about if you get in a car accident and you have too little of insurance and somebody has to go to the hospital, it goes to your insurance. Well, your insurance is only going to cover up to the limit that you're paying for. And if you're paying for $10,000 or $25,000 of coverage, somebody's in the hospital, they can very easily surpass that limit. And so making sure that you have enough coverage on there is going to be really, really important, especially just to protect yourself, because you don't want to have to pay those things out of pocket and accidents do happen.
Yeah, I would echo this and say, if you're on what I call like kid insurance, you need to be on adult insurance. You know, the $25,000 coverage is when you like are like 18 and can't afford real coverage. You need to have good coverage. Most people get to a place where they have to have auto, renters, and umbrella insurance, $1 million covered, because people sue for any stupid stuff, like anything. So you've got to find a way to work that through and say, all right, do I have the right insurance? But at the same time, I don't want you to have too much insurance. It is an adjustment. You know, there are some things like I love to add on, like for example, on home or renters, you can get for $25-$50 a year, cyber coverage and identity theft coverage. Really great coverage because that happens all the time. You know, there's certain things that will happen. I think the other part is what I don't like to see is, hey, I couldn't afford the insurance, so I have none. Well, if you can't afford insurance, you can't afford a problem. You know, and I had a conversation with like one of my colleagues on this. So they live in Florida and their homeowner's insurance is going to be $10,000 a year. And I'm like, that's crazy. And their answer was to go without insurance. And I'm like, wow, that's crazy too. Like I don't have a great answer. You're like a bit, it's a risk, but if you can't afford to replace the car, the house, the whatever, you can't afford to go without insurance. And it's hard. Like it's a balancing act. I think people like, especially with cars, they've just been on the same insurance forever. And they just like get a new car. They send, you know, the person, hey, I got a new car, and they never look at it. You have to be looking at this. And actually the best thing for you from an insurance standpoint is twice a year, every 2 years to actually go and shop insurance, see what's better rate. You at least need the basic coverage. Now, we went through a bunch of red lights. This is not everything. There are times, so we meet with clients all the time, and every once in a while, I'm like, where did that come from? Like, it's all middle, out of the middle of nowhere. And they go, yeah, that's a red light. I think what we're trying to do with this list is just give you some things to watch out for. If you've seen things on here that like, hey, that could be a problem, well, then we need to fix it. Now, you know, you can look through all of our resources. We've got podcasts and most of this stuff to help you through it. But you need to figure out the priorities. And the first priority is to take care of the flashing red lights.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please consider leaving a rating or review. We'd love to keep the conversation going. Follow Child Free Wealth on social media or email us at podcast@childfreewealth.com. If you're interested in working together, learn more by visiting our website, www.childfreewealth.com. We'll see you next time.